Die Creme de la Sommerpause continues und wir zeigen deshalb nochmal eine unserer Lieblingsfolgen aus der ersten Staffel des Podcasts. Und diesmal wählt diese Lieblingsfolge aus ich, Daniel. Und diese Lieblingsfolge ist keine reguläre Folge, in der wir wie sonst üblich ein Meme nehmen, beschreiben und überanalysieren, sondern eins unserer Interviews, das wir geführt haben. Und zwar ein Interview, das ich geführt habe mit einem echten Meme-Star, und zwar mit Rebecca Black, besser bekannt als die Sängerin des unfreiwilligen viralen Hits Friday. Das ist nicht nur interessant, weil wir auf ein altes, cringiges Meme zurückschauen, sondern weil das wirklich einfach eine interessante junge Frau ist und es ein wirklich tolles Gespräch war, das ich immer noch gerne zurückdenke. Und seitdem baller ich immer noch regelmäßig ihre neue Musik, die viel besser ist als Friday. Während die Sommerpause weiterläuft, sind wir alle ziemlich beschäftigt. Valentina baut mit der Indie Arena Booth das coolste Online-Event aller Zeiten, das jetzt gerade gestartet ist. Christina spielt sich durch die Nominierungen für den Creative Gaming Award des Play Festivals, das Ende des Jahres auch wahrscheinlich digital stattfindet. Und Florian boostet sein geiles Musik-Review in einer Minute Projekt Scratch the Surface auf YouTube. Ich bin einfach nur generell entspannt und faulenze rum. Ist ja immerhin Urlaub, so sieht's aus. So, und jetzt das Interview mit jemandem, der viel interessanter ist als ich, und zwar Rebecca Black. Ach so, und der Einstieg des Interviews bezieht sich auf die originale Anmoderation, denn der Termin des Interviews hat sich in der Vorplanung einmal verschoben, weil Rebecca auf die Black Lives Matter Demos gegangen ist.
Actually, the rescheduling is something that I'd like to talk about if you want to, because we had to move the interview because you went to a Black Lives Matter protest march, and I went to one as well here in Berlin with, I think, 15,000 people. But, well, racism and police violence are problems in Germany as well. It's not quite the same situation as you have in the US right now, so I'm kind of curious how how you feel with all that's going on and how that has impacted you besides rescheduling some interview.
I hope for everybody that everything has kind of been put into a different perspective. And I know certainly for me it has. And racism is definitely a global issue. And there is definitely a sense of a powerful feeling seeing the whole world tackling this in their own ways. Seeing protests in Germany and the UK and also other countries protesting for the states. I think this year has been a massive turning point in the way that we think together as a planet and as a global society, rather than, you know, country to country or city to city or religion to religion. And I've just been trying to listen as much as I can and then use my voice and uplift the communities that need. It's something I've always tried to do, but here specifically with Black Lives Matter and uplifting the Black community, I, as somebody who has a platform and who has an audience and also even just in my personal life, it's something that I want to make sure I'm doing what I can and then some, because I just think that it's really, I've always believed that every person, every community deserves an equal chance. And in getting that equal chance, it doesn't just happen in a pretty little nice way all the time. I've had to fight for a lot of my own personal freedoms. And so I relate to that on one level, even though I'll never completely understand. I just want to be there to support. And I'm really proud of my generation for, you know, kicking this movement into gear in their own way.
Yeah, so your social media feeds on Twitter and Instagram are full of Black Lives Matter content right now. And you put the Black Lives Matter cut.co link with all the stuff where you can support the movement on your on your Instagram page instead of like your Spotify account. So you already mentioned that you have a platform. Is that something that you consciously think about, how to use that platform that 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 you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think because of the unique trajectory I've had, starting super young, and I've always, I'm kind of part of that generation of child of the internet. I've always found myself more on the internet than I have in my real life, especially when I was younger. And regardless of what happened with Friday, it definitely, I've always used the internet as a tool to educate myself, to connect with people, to hear other people's stories. I grew up in a pretty traditional, or what we would call in the States, like conservative family. And pretty quickly I realized I didn't totally resonate with the same views that certain people in my family had. And so I've always been trying to find my own voice, and I've always been trying to speak up. And almost always, it's the most uncomfortable conversations that I have with people, no matter who they are, whether they're online or in person, that end up ending with the most change happening, or ending with new understanding and learning. And I've become very unafraid to do that, and more so with time. So whatever it has been, and right now there's this like balancing act that I think all creators are trying to have of, you know, how to use their platform in a way that's the most beneficial for everybody, because there are so many different perspectives to look at it. But I think the most important thing is that you're looking at some way to do it. Just don't ignore it, because I think I feel the responsibility as somebody who has an audience of, you know, a majority of mine are my age or a little bit younger or a little bit older. And I feel like if I'm not having the conversations, if I'm not hearing from them, if I'm not using the resources that I have, then it's like selfies and even, you know, the whatever, it just feels all so simple. And it feels like there's always going to be a time and place to, you know, talk about yourself and what's going on with you. And right now is not that time. So I am just trying to learn, and I appreciate my audience being so encouraging of that and not so, you know, immediately asking me to go back to my regular content. Rather than that, I see them like going out and either going to protests on their own, or talking about it online, or sending me new information. So I just think that that's a new normal that we're all going into. It's one that I hope that we're going into, to use the internet for good.
Yeah, and you're doing that a lot, not only with Black Lives Matter. You have the song you did in collaboration with Best Buddies, an organization that helps people with disabilities. I just saw that today, that you're part of a digital pride event by It Gets Better. And I guess one thought I had is it's kind of nice when someone you get to know through a meme doesn't turn out to be a milkshake duck, but actually like a good person. And one thought that came to my head was how easy it probably could have been for you to turn out to be kind of a jerk to other people after the negativity you got at the beginning of your career at a very young age. So yeah, I guess it's a really weird question, I guess, but how did you turn out to be so positive in the way you interact with the public?
Well, after, I appreciate that. oh, gosh. I mean, I think, weirdly, the experience I had with going viral and people immediately writing me off and defining me by, like, one thing that I did when I was 13, all of those experiences and those feelings, it could have led to one way, and it could have led to a lot of self-hatred and kind of disdain for the world. Like, I would understand watching that from an outside perspective if somebody felt that way after going viral and kind of being treated the way that I was as a kid, which wasn't great. And for a while, I also did have a bit of those feelings. I think, honestly, I have to give credit to the people in my life that have always pushed for not success in a way that we a lot of times look at success as far as like having, you know, a great career or anything like that. But I think certain people along the way have just kind of lifted me up and shown that I do, they've had to show me what I could offer to the world. And after a lot of work on myself and conversations with therapists and trying to just reflect on what happened, I luckily didn't end up that way. And it's taken a lot of work and I'm definitely still going. But I think I realized that, I don't know, maybe it's again part of the child of the internet thing of like just really always feeling this like spot for the community, this soft spot in myself for like the parts of the communities online who are there for people who don't necessarily fit in their own lives, whether it be queer communities or gosh, even for me, like growing up as a theater kid, that was something that I found communities online that were there for me. I just have always felt, I haven't always actually, but I've learned to trust that if I'm honest with my community and I am honest in everything that I do and I don't try to sugarcoat things, like chances are people will relate to it. What I don't think that people relate to, and this is a lesson I had to learn the hard way, is when you do try to say that you're fine when you're not, or when you try to pretend like you're having this amazing, perfect experience. And I think if I spent the past 10 years lying to myself and lying to the world saying I'm fine, how would anybody relate to that? Because it's just not true. But being honest with the things that I've experienced, whether it be talking about mental health and online etiquette and the things that I've learned and the perspective I have, or talking about depression and how that affected me as a teenager, and you know, all the other things that are just experiences I've had that I can share, I think those help. And I just try to, I've seen where good can still happen. And I also just really believe in like kindness, no matter what.
You said the word honest a lot. And that's actually something I have in my notes, because I looked at some of your YouTube videos where you're just talking about yourself in a very honest and vulnerable way. Things where you like talk about the way you see sexuality, for example. And there also was this post earlier this year on Twitter where you talked about the whole experience of Friday happening to you in a way when you were so young. How long did it take you to really embrace that, be that honest and say that things weren't fine?
I mean, I'm still working on it. Yeah. That's probably the biggest lesson I learn every day, is that you always just have to keep, I at least always am working on myself and realizing that, or, you know, finding that there are new parts of myself that still need help or that I could be so much better to myself on, and, you know, whatever it might be, it's always going. But I think these past couple years for me have been really filled with a lot of change personally. I think finally I was able to stop believing so many of the things that I had no choice but to believe when I was 13. I mean, not just one person, but when so many people are telling you over and over again that you have no place to be doing what you're doing, that you should never, you know, you're basically a joke or you're stupid for following your dreams. When you're that young, you don't have anything to bounce that off of. Like, there's no sense of self to say, actually, no, I don't agree with that. So I just believed it. And it really has been a difficult process to overcome those insecurities that have been there from such an early age. And every day I have to remind myself or try to, you know, be aware of when I'm doing something that might be self-sabotaging. That's where my song Self-Sabotage came from. I was like, oh my God, what am I doing to myself? And I can't stop it. Like, I think that a lot of us have these patterns that, you know, have come from insecurities or from other people projecting them onto us, that we get in our own way more than anybody else. And finally, through it takes work on yourself, and I'm still figuring out how to do that. But it can change as long as you're consistent with it. So I've just, I think, been really consistent with trying to take care of myself for the past couple years. And it's in the most like unexpected moments that, you know, it will resonate with people. Like that Twitter post and that Instagram that I did a few months ago was just because I wanted to say something different and be more honest, because it's so easy for me to go, woo, you know, it's been 9 years, crazy. But that just kind of like, not that every moment on the internet has to be so deep and learning, but it's easy to let all your kind of words and photos and posts become kind of empty. And so I just wanted to be honest about how I was feeling. And I think that it clearly clicked with some people in a new way.
Yeah, it definitely also clicked with me. I remember when I saw it, that was when I checked out your YouTube account, because of course I remembered Friday and a couple of other old songs from you, but I then rediscovered what you do, and I also rediscovered that you're still doing music, because that's like the question that came to my head. I don't even know what Rebecca Black is up to. I remember the name, but I don't know it. So I checked that out. And the music you did in recent years is quite different from the stuff that followed up Friday. And I think and you're credited as having written them. So how did the new music you did in the last couple of years change? How does it differ from the earlier songs that were written for you?
Growing up, we'll do a lot. I mean, gosh, when Friday was out and the music that kind of came really quickly after that, like I would never really bash those songs, because I honestly have such a soft spot for them, because I had fun doing them and I was young and I was, you know, I was still learning. But it wasn't until I was 18 that I was really around like a team of people or found writers that really let me have my own voice. There was nobody, you know, from like the age of 13 to 16 or 17 that really, I'd say like 16, that really gave a crap about what I had to say. It wasn't anything like that. It was very much, how can we strategically do something about this, or, you know, make you the next pop star or the next Katy Perry, or turn this into something good. The intentions just weren't there, in the way that when you look at people who have changed music, or look at people who have made a real impact on music or on us as music listeners, that's because they have something to say. And I had to figure out what that was. At 13, I mean, unless you're Billie Eilish, like, it takes a second to figure that out and have the experience. And it took me a moment to understand like what experience I had and what I had to say. And all of the past few years, I've been just living my life and finding things like my sexuality and coming into myself more and having more to say. And I've learned a lot about music and writing. And so now, yeah, I mean, I don't think I've put out a single thing since 2016 that I haven't had a huge part of the process of, because that's just so important to me now. I think because I didn't have, you know, the space to say anything in the past. And I feel like I mean, on one hand, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing, but that's what keeps it exciting, I guess. But on the other hand, I think there is a part of myself that, you know, knows that I am learning and trust myself just more to take risks and to only really put out things that I believe in. And that's something I still am working on. But I think as like a music artist, regardless of whether you're in pop or in alt or indie or rock or rap or whatever it is, like that should be, it's your name that's going on it. So you should really love it.
Was that process of finding out what you wanted to say a part of the break you took from releasing music in the midst of the 2010s?
Yeah. I knew that something wasn't working. When I was 16, I was like, this is just, I felt a bit pointless to not feel like I was really learning anything. And I don't think that I was ready. I never thought that I would be 13 and like out there with 100 million views on YouTube. I thought I was going to be 13 and like in my school musical. And then I would go to high school and do more musicals and then go to college and figure things out from there. I did know that I had a passion for performing and for music, and it was something I wanted to do, but I was certainly not ready. So I guess I just took a little bit of time. And it was something that my family encouraged as well. You know, like, let yourself have like teenage years, let yourself go to high school. And I did and I didn't. Like, I went to high school and I did have a lot of that. But then I also started my YouTube channel that like really allowed me to feel like I at least had some space. It was the first thing that I felt like I had built that was mine fully and not kind of taken out of my hands and kind of spun out of control. So step by step, it's all come to this, I guess.
I wonder what, well, you already mentioned how much has changed in the 10 years since you became famous. So what's your audience like today? What are your fans like today? What's your community is what you use today? Are those people who followed your music from back then, or are there new people who rediscovered you, like, for example, like I did? Or
it's kind of a mix. I mean, what I've noticed is because of the different things that I've done, like having YouTube, having music, and the way that my music has changed. And also, you know, a big part of what I do is like speaking out on mental health and speaking out on certain activism type things that I really care about, whether it be Pride or, you know, now obviously there's Black Lives Matter and the work I do with Best Buddies, and the list goes on. But there is a large part of my audience that I feel like has grown up with me since I was in high school and started my YouTube channel. And I've watched them grow up. I have met them like many times at shows or wherever the heck, I don't even know. But that has been really, it continues to be really exciting because I feel like I mean, I do know these people. It's not even that I feel like I do. I actually have gotten to see them grow and help shape me as well as I guess I have to them. And I mean, gosh, with everything that's been happening and in the new music, I feel like there is definitely a shift in my audience now. And even coming out in a way, I feel like resonated with a certain type of person that maybe, I don't know, I didn't even really expect it to. And it's just, you know, I'm definitely proud to have a community that feels well-rounded and hopefully will only continue to be more diverse. And in a sense that I'm trying to be more active than I ever was on speaking to a more diverse group of people, because I think no matter what, that is important.
You talked in that post and in a couple of interviews about how much bullying you had to go through after Friday went viral. And one thing I had to think about when I read that post was that today we have apps like TikTok, where really young teens and young kids post videos and can go viral like any second. There's even less of a barrier of keeping kids from becoming internet famous than 10 years ago. Well, the cheesy question would be like, is there some advice you'd give those kids? But maybe the more interesting question is that something you think about when you like see some viral video of some kids dancing or performing going viral, and maybe people making fun of them and not everybody liking it?
Yeah, of course. I just hope that the younger ones and the kids who it all is happening very fast for them. And now, I mean, it's on a completely different level than it even was in 2011. I mean, going viral, it just is so, it's turned into such a different thing because the internet is such a different thing. And the internet itself has grown so much. YouTube as a platform was nothing like it was now when Friday came out and it went as viral as it did. I just hope that these kids have support in their personal lives and people looking out for them as kids, because I think That's something I've felt very fortunate with, is my parents and my family have always looked at me as their daughter before looking at me as something with a huge money sign on their head. But I did also have those people in my life that looked at me as a, you know, their next career ticket. And as a child, that can't be lost. Like, that can't afford to be lost, because you're affecting the life of a person forever. So I just hope that they do. And, you know, on one hand, I wish I could go step in and like be there for everybody, but I can't, and that's not my duty. But yeah, I mean, going viral in general just feels like such a different thing now. It happens like a million times a day now, especially with something like TikTok. And even now that I'm on TikTok, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how these kids do it. Makes me feel really old. But, you know, there's definitely pros and cons. And I love that. I'll always love that kids can use the internet to be creative and find new communities. And I think that's something to, you know, be talked about just as much as the negative things. But yeah, there's just got to be somebody watching out for them.
Did you after all, look back at more of a positive, also, again, a really kind of silly question, but no, I think you might know where I'm getting at.
I mean, it definitely is both. I think now I can look at it as a real positive, because I just don't know who I would be mentally, emotionally, what lessons I would have learned without it. I mean, obviously, I would just have a completely different life path, and I wouldn't want to change that. And especially going back to myself as a 13-year-old, my intentions were so pure, and I was just trying to have fun and do something creative. And I'll always preach that for kids. So yeah, I do think it's a positive thing, but definitely a learning experience for me and many people.
One thing I'm actually curious about is, do you still get royalties for Friday? Is that still something that you benefit from financially?
Gosh, I mean, it's the way it works. Gosh, it was so long ago that it was quite complicated and even hard for me to understand, but music does work through royalties, yes.
And this, you've released a couple of EPs now. Are you planning to actually release an album, whatever relevance that format might still have, or maybe more broadly asking, what are your plans for the future and going forward with making music?
I mean, I've been writing. This year has continued to be very unpredictable, so who knows? But in all seriousness, I mean, I have spent this entire time through quarantine and everything going on, and then also just beforehand, writing a ton of stuff. So there's music that I'm really, really excited to put out. And I want to make sure that the timing is right, because like I said, like, there's so much time to talk about yourself and do things for yourself. And right now I'm really trying to be there for other people, and figuring out ways that I can, you know, be there for myself and be there for other people. But new music will definitely come. And whether it's in the form of an album or an EP, I mean, time will tell. I just really want to continue to be consistently putting stuff out there, because my stuff is changing a lot, and just as much as I guess I'm changing as a person. So I always like to be timely when I'm writing something to when I release it, rather than let a song sit for 2 years, just because it's who I am right now. I want people to hear it. So it'll come. It'll come very soon.
How do you approach writing music? Are you writing the lyrics? Are you instruments? Because I actually don't know how you're, I'm yeah, really curious about that.
I've definitely had to shift a lot of the ways in which I work this year, because everything is now done through Zoom. And I mean, the last time I was in a session was like right before lockdown, which traditionally I would be in a room with, you know, maybe one or two other people. And I always come up with something to start with. And whether that be a melody, whether that be a concept or a story that I know I want to sculpt into something, or, I mean, over this quarantine, I've finally taught myself how to play guitar. And I played piano and a couple other instruments already. But That's been a task that has actually really helped me in a lot of ways. So thank God I finally did that. But I come in with something that I know that I want to say. And sometimes that already exists in the form of a melody. Like the song Sweetheart that I put out last year, I had this la la melody that became like the backbone of the song, which is like la 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 la. So having something to start with always really helps. I've also found that it's really important, at least for me, to be the instigator in it, because then I know that it's something that will fit with my stuff, because it's really easy to go in as, you know, sometimes I'll write for another artist and that becomes their show, you know, and their voice and their music. And sometimes I'll be working with a co-writer to tweak things and make them, you know, as best as they can be. And then I'll work with a producer to, you know, build a track and build production and work through that with them for the next couple weeks or a couple months, depending on how long the process is. But right now that's all, that same process is still happening. It's just being done through Zoom. So makes it a little more complicated. Yesterday I was trying to figure out how to track vocals where a producer would be like taking over my computer as I do it. It all gets very, way too complicated for me. But yeah, I mean, it's been something that I've always wanted to be a huge part of the process, and therefore I've always been. And I'm trying to make myself a better writer, because it's just what I just want the music to be the best that it can.
Yeah, so I'm basically through with all my questions, and all I can do is say thank you for this
wonderful, insightful
interview. Oh, I have one last question, and that's maybe a bit of a weird thing. There's this meme in support of the trans community where you try to get famous people to say trans rights. Would you mind saying trans rights so we can put that in our podcast and have Rebecca Black say trans rights?
Absolutely. Trans rights.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really cool.
I'm always here for it.
Have you do you know that
I do actually, yeah, you
know. Okay. Again, thank you so much. That was a really, really beautiful and insightful interview.
Thank you. Thanks.